Hey everyone, it's Alan Schimmel for Tech Strong Gang. It's kind of an AI Monday here. You know, I used to love this song by Warren Zevon, and to paraphrase it, today's going to be about send lawyers, AI, and money. All that and more on Tech Strong Gang. All right. Hey, happy Monday, everyone. Welcome to Tech Strong Gang as we kick off another episode of the gang here, followed by our usual full broadcast of Tech Strong TV, including podcasts and sessions and interviews and all things tech. So keep your dial right here. I don't even know if that's a right word anymore, keep your dial. Who keeps it? Who has a dial? But anyway, I do remember the days where we turned a dial. That was my job in my house. I was the remote control growing up. But anyway, we've got a great show, a lot of AI themes today. Let me introduce you to who we have on with me. First of all, from Philadelphia, and we're not going to get into the whole thing we got last time about brotherly love and Hackavision or whatever it was. Our managing editor for DevOps.com and Security Boulevard, Sharon Florentine. Welcome, Sharon.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to have you back. I mean, you're part of the gang. Speaking of gang members, though, one of our roving gang members, I don't know what she does when she's not on the gang, but actually I do know what she does, but she'll tell us. Joining us from, I think, home in New Mexico, our own Tracy Reagan. Hey, Tracy, how are you?
Hey, Alan. Hope you're enjoying your time in Paris.
Well,
wish I was there.
Yes, we're going to talk about that right off the bat. So Mike Vizard and I are out in Paris for KubeCon, which kicks off tomorrow, actually. Actually, tomorrow's day zero. KubeCon officially, I think, starts Wednesday. And we'll be here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, broadcasting live, streaming live. And we'll be repeating it throughout the day. So no matter what time zone you're in the world, you can catch our KubeCon coverage from wherever you are. And this year, we're working in partnership with the CNCF. They're sponsoring a lot of the videos there. And so we'll be having a lot of the maintainers and larger sponsors of the show on our TechStrong TV broadcast, as well as maybe some surprises. Stay tuned. We'll bring some extra programming your way. Anyway, though, let me introduce our last gang member today. He's not with me here in Boca Raton TechStrong headquarters. He's up in Paris, but we have our chief content officer, Mike Vizard. Hey, Mike.
Hey, happy to be here, though.
Absolutely. There's something to be said for Paris in springtime, as they say.
There you go.
But Mike, why don't you kick it off for us today? What are we covering?
All right. Well, it looks like tech bros are having a rumble in the alley. We got Elon Musk has filed a lawsuit against OpenAI and Sam Altman in particular, because as far as I can tell, they violated some agreement many years ago where OpenAI was supposed to be only producing models for the good of humanity. And then somewhere along the way, they decided to become a commercial entity. And Elon Musk apparently says he signed some sort of founding agreement and filed a lawsuit to that effect. By all accounts, the lawsuit is, shall we say, rambling. But, you know, it's Elon. It is, you know, the nature of the beast with him. So that's just part and parcel of the drama, I would say. But I frankly cannot tell if there's merit to this case or not, because he's basically saying, you know, you guys changed the rules, but, you know, they got the board to approve the changes in the rules. So I don't know. Tracy, you run a business. What's your take on all this?
You know, when I first saw this story, I thought to myself, okay, if I was a juror sitting on this case, knowing what I know about software and running a software company and understanding who Elon Musk is, who's brilliant, understands what it requires to build software, he never believed that it was going to stay open. There is no way you can build a chat GPT or anything close to it in an open source world. I personally believe it's impossible. There's a lot of money that's gone behind this, and you just are not going to get that kind of support in an open source structure. I mean, we have great tools that have come. We've got Linux, you know, as open source, but it took years and years to develop it over time. Then we put Kubernetes on top of it. There's awesome tools like Jenkins in the DevOps world. But to be honest, to build a brand new kind of software and to build that kind of that data, it's going to take more than an open source group of contributors. He never believed it. And we'll see if Grok takes off. He's got his XAI and he has Grok, he's going to open source. But how long is he going to then leave that open source?
Until he can make money off of it. And here's the thing. It wasn't necessarily that it was supposed to be open. It was supposed to be non-commercial, which means it wasn't going to be making profits or whatever. And there are still in AI, like Microsoft's investment in AI, for instance, is not like a traditional investment. They get a certain percentage of OpenAI's revenue until they make back their money, and then their kind of ownership, if you will, in OpenAI starts to diminish. So there has been that tip of the cap to kumbaya, goodness. But let's face it, Elon Musk bringing this suit, this is like last week when Donald Trump said he's Honest Don. Right? There's not much of a difference here. And for me, the cherry on the cake is Sam Altman produces the emails from Elon that when he resigned from the board, it was because he was pissed that he couldn't take OpenAI and make a part of Tesla, because I'm sure he wasn't going to make any money from Tesla by using this. Right? So, he who hath no sin should throw the first rock. This man is... He's not even allowed near rocks. So I would toss this suit on a summary judgment and make him pay every dollar that OpenAI has to put into lawyer fees.
Yeah, I'm with you there 100%. And I'm sort of getting tired of people with money using our court system in frivolous ways and getting away with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think... Not that OpenAI is an angel or, that they have all these pure intentions. But if it's not OpenAI, it's going to be the Chinese or the Russian or Google or someone else. And let's stop pretending here. This is warfare in the 21st century. It's not necessarily fought with guns and planes or even drones. It's fought over IP rights.
It's two emperors going into battle, right?
Yeah.
I want to wait for the movie, though. It kind of reminds me of that old Michael Douglas movie where greed is good.
Gordon Gekko.
This whole thing out, except it's in Silicon Valley instead of Wall Street.
Well, they've had some movies about that one too, right? There was the Social Network about Facebook and that, and I don't know.
I'm willing to look on the positive side of this kind of a case. Who knows if this does go to, continues through the process and goes to some kind of a court hearing and a jury. What would we learn? What would we learn about building these companies, especially ones that are, want to be, a free license and allow people to use it? I think we had learned a lot about how these organizations are structured. And I believe that there's something to know about that. There's something to know when a Microsoft takes over so much of a particular IP that the world could take advantage of. So maybe there's a side of him that has, maybe like just a little bit that has something to say about it. I don't know if he would have continued down the road of being completely kind of, I think he's a for-profit man, but having a trial might expose some information that we don't know. We don't hear behind the scenes. So
I think contrary,
Mike said, maybe the show.
maybe it would be a good show, but I think frankly, the OpenAI model has been very open, not open source, but we know what the governing documents were. We know what the fine print was on the Microsoft investment. But here's something else I think we've got to do. We can't equate all of AI or even all of generative AI with OpenAI. Yes, they were first with ChatGPT. But you know what? Google is not a slacker. And they've got DeepMind and they've, tried now two or three different kind of launches on this, but they sooner or later, they're going to get it right. They will compete. Apple just bought or recently bought an AI company. I don't know if we've covered that, but I saw it in the news and I don't have it in front of me at this moment. But they bought an AI company and they're doing their thing on it. Meta has it. And, you know, every company is working, and it kind of leads us into the other things we're looking at, and LLMs and SLMs and all these things. But every one of these hyperscalers is working on their own AI engine.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bunch of startups too, like Anthropic and all kinds of folks.
Anthropic and some of the others. We're only, you know, in the beginning of what's going to be a marathon here. Let's see who has the kick down that final stretch.
Sharon, do you think that people's reputations will get tarnished as a result of all this? Because there's a certain amount of halo effect that goes on in the tech sector where we're doing good things for humanity and all this other stuff. And it may come out that, you know, this is just pure, you know, ego activity.
I mean, my super cynical side, which is probably 99% of my personality, let's be honest, that side of me says, you know, there was a report that I read in the news that was talking about something like Twitter/X lost 30% of its subscribers or users in the last year. And this whole discussion makes me think, you know, how much is he scrambling for funds and sees OpenAI as, all right, well, maybe they're making some money and I can take advantage of that. And, you know, then my second thought would be, I'm not sure how much more tarnish can be applied in these situations. I think there's always going to be the stan camp that these tech bros that folks hold up and put on pedestals can do no wrong. And then there's, you know, the great divide. And the other side is everything that they do is evil. I kind of think, despite how cynical I tend to be, that the truth is somewhere in the middle. But I don't know that this is going to change anyone's mind about these folks' personalities.
Yeah. I think part of it is what Tracy alluded to, though, right? This could just be one big giant PR move because everybody's going, oh, Elon's got an AI platform now. We probably weren't talking about it as much as they were 3 days ago.
Right.
That's another good point. But I got to tell you, the drama of this one, you got Elon Musk involved. That's like, you know, that's almost as good as Taylor Swift, almost. But but quite frankly, what happened with Altman a couple of weeks or 2 months ago, whatever, when the board fired him and then he came riding back in. And, you know, we haven't seen the likes of that in tech since Steve Jobs. And I don't know if Steve did it as dramatically as Altman and the OpenAI story. That'll make for a good movie.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I kind of relate Elon Musk to a Steve Jobs, actually.
Oh, Steve's turning in his grave. Don't say that.
OpenAI may have been like, we got to get rid of Elon Musk. What are we going to do? There may be a backstory we haven't heard yet.
So do you have any candidates for who's going to play Elon Musk and who's going to play Sam Altman?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Oh, Elon Musk, I would put the guy, what was he just in? He played Napoleon, Joaquin Phoenix.
Oh, Joaquin Phoenix.
I think he'd make a good Elon Musk.
He would.
Yes. And Sam Altman, maybe.
Jonah Hill?
Nah. He's too comedic.
Maybe Cillian Murphy.
That would be a good one. That would be a good one, yeah. Here we are playing Hollywood producer. Who knew on Tech Strong Gang? Gang, let's take a break and let's come back with our next one, okay? Mm-hmm. We'll be back in a second.
All right. right, we're back and we're talking about what the European Union is up to with AI, because they at least have now agreed to something that will eventually become a law. And if you look at it closely, this framework that they are passing basically says that we will apply different levels of restrictions based on what we think is the level of risk associated with any given AI initiative. So they're going to, I guess they're saying that they're going to create some sort of sliding scale. It's not quite clear to me how they're going to enforce all that. But Alan, you got some thoughts about where you're going to see these regulations? Are we just going to copy that around the world, or is there going to be different regulations everywhere? And how much of a mess are we looking at?
Well, first of all, I applaud the AI for at least trying to do something. You know, we seem not to be able to get out of our own way here. We've had the presidential commission putting out stuff in CISA and private industries here in the U.S. talking about regulations of AI. But like everything else in our country, it seems we just don't have the political will to get things done. On the other hand, the EU does. Do they sometimes, I think, go over the line toward, and you know, on the heavy hand, perhaps? What I'm hoping is that, you know, it's like hemming pants. If you cut the pants and make them too short, you can never make them longer. But if you do the hem and you still need to take a little more off, you could always do that. And I hope that's not what we have here, where the EU has made it so draconian that it inhibits the free flow and progress and evolution of this really important technology. Now, in terms of, you know, other jurisdictions following suit, the fact of the matter is we live in a small world after all, like the song says, and we don't need other jurisdictions to follow suit. If you're doing business on the internet, if you're on the internet, chances are you're interacting with EU consumers, EU-based companies, and it applies to you whether you're within those borders or not. You have to, the same as GDPR. So, you know, I think the EU standard will be the standard until we get our act together, maybe. Over here. And of course, the EU can have all the standards they want. The Chinese thumb their nose at it. So do the Russians, obviously. So, as I said, it's a crazy mixed up world, except for Lola.
Tracy, what's your...
Go ahead, Sharon.
I was going to say, it's going to be interesting to see how the EU's push meshes with what happened here in the States. Late last year, I believe, there was the agreement between Microsoft, Google, Meta, OpenAI. I don't know if Apple was involved in that, but there were a number of companies that got together in a consortium type group led by the White House that were trying to commit to standards around safe AI development. And obviously, that's a lot looser than a regulatory framework with, you know, actual mandates that are written in law. But it'll be interesting to see how closely those two things track and where the hem is longer and where the hem is shorter, to use Alan's analogy.
Tracy, is any of this stuff worth the paper it's written on?
So, I believe that what the EU is trying to do is worthy of their effort. I think it's interesting that they're taking the leadership role on this, and I'm sorry that we can't, as Alan pointed out. I do believe that there should be some oversight around the kind of the areas that they actually pointed out. I think it was health and safety, personal freedoms and democracy. If there's AI in those areas, I think that it should have... Maybe even self-driving cars might be something we should include. I guess that would be safety, right? Yeah. I think that's something that we should be focused on. I would have loved to see this kind of discussion come out of the U.S. It bothers me that we are not leading the discussion. And what I have found, to Sharon's point, that we have consortiums now of these I like to call them, you know, the giants. and this is in almost every open kind of source foundation I have worked with. There's always these giants, and they sort of try to lead the discussion, and they tag somebody to within their organization to work on it. That person may not be super passionate about that. It's just that's their job that they have to face. And it's not, I don't really think it's a serious effort. I see that in other, community involvement that I have. It doesn't mean it's that serious of an effort. So if a government does it, it's going to have to be a lot more serious. They're going to have to take a much deeper look at it. And it can't just be, saying we have a check mark out there. We created this AI security symposium or consortium, and we're going to start having discussions about it. Because if we think about, if we even look at what's going on with TikTok in the US, I'm sure that if it was reversed and we had a TikTok in China, that we would be able to get any of the Chinese demographics data from it. They would chop us off at the knees. They would never let a piece of software like that into their culture. So to me, this discussion around AI security, cybersecurity, things like TikTok is all the same conversation. It's how do we secure software regardless of what kind of software it is. Now, I know that AI has some particular attributes, let's just say, like being able to put somebody's head on a porn scene. That would be horrifying to me. And I would hope that there'd be a way to, hold somebody accountable if that happened. So we have to have this discussion, and I'm glad the EU is taking it on, and I'm glad that they did call out particular areas that they wanted to find that risk around. I think they're going in the right direction. Will they have to scale back in the future? I don't know. I'm guessing they're going to have to add to it.
I think they will have to add to it, because I'm a little dubious of the whole, let's define risk, right? We've been talking about trying to define risk in the land of cybersecurity for decades, and we've made almost hardly any progress. So who's going to stand around and actually agree that the level of risk with this particular implementation of something is, beyond what we're willing to consider? Who has that opinion? Who ultimately makes that call? Because I could put 10 people in a room and they'll never agree.
Or 12 angry men.
How's it regulated? If somebody is breaking the law in Russia for a piece of software that's running in the UK, how do we, it's like, I live out on a rural road. There's five homes here, and somebody decided that our dirt road, they didn't want anybody going more than 30 miles an hour. Now, it's hard to go more than 30 miles an hour, but I tend to. But who's going to give me a ticket? They put a sign up, but okay, it's a sign. Sometimes I just honestly give it the finger. It's just a sign standing on the dirt road.
In the case of EU, they can set sanctions if the fine wasn't paid. Right,
yes,
they can. Because the whole putting aside this AI thing, look at GDPR, but look at any of the EU rules that don't even apply necessarily around technology. Their shtick is, because let's face it, EU is not a country, it's a union, right? But their thing is, look, if you want to do business with our population, with our jurisdictions, you got to play by our rules. Otherwise, you can't do business with us. And when you think about that, that's a very modern economic, socio-political theory right there, right? We're going to use the big stick of our economic muscle to force you to play by our rules. Now, it didn't work so good in telling Russia not to attack Ukraine, right? They put all these sanctions in, as did we. But, you got a leaky back door, the China and India, who don't play by those rules. But if you want to do business with the EU, and as a bloc, it's the size of the US comparably, you got to play by their rules. That's what they're saying. And if they, And if they enforce that, it could have some teeth.
Well, I hope the area that they first really look at is, and this is just because it's an interest of mine, is, being able to, if there's a high-risk software vulnerability out there, It definitely should be illegal, and there should be some serious consequences as somebody tampers with that vulnerability, right? And uses AI to enhance that vulnerability's impact. And that was one of the areas that they did talk about, because that we can measure. As Mike pointed out, it's sometimes hard to measure this stuff, but we know when we have a high-risk vulnerability. So I think there's low-hanging fruit that we could look at, and I hope most companies who are trying to make money in the EU or the United States, I think will comply. But what about all the bad actors that we don't even know who actually pushed that vulnerability and then exploited it even further?
Is a bad actor going to say, "Oh my, I just broke the law in the EU"? Well, not unless precisely. Interpol is knocking on my door and emptying my bank account. Then I might care.
Exactly.
We actually had a piece on Security Boulevard this week talking about that, what Tracy was alluding to, that the DOJ here is now, they're going to take into account whether or not you use AI in certain crimes, and that would be, that not would result in harsher factor. Sentences. Right.
And I'm all for it.
Yeah, that's really interesting when you think about using AI to commit crimes. It makes it really scary.
Right.
I suppose if I rob a store with a gun versus a bat, it makes a difference, right? So it's the same thing with AI.
It's like a
right?
felony murder kind of charge, right? You know, using AI is a contributing factor that ratchets up, you know, whether it's a C felony to an A felony or something like that.
I'm not sure, though, that we all agree that on the severity rating of vulnerabilities. I have yet to meet a developer who agreed with the severity rating that anybody was assigned to any vulnerability.
Well, but there's more to vulnerabilities than severity. Are they exploitable? Are they reachable? You know, there's nuances there that may be lost on a general pop, you know, person. And we've seen a similar thing, by the way, in the U.S., right? They CISA and some of the others have come out with new regs that say, you know, software has to be free of serious vulnerabilities. Well, it's only free of serious vulnerabilities as of the second one. I didn't know that was a vulnerability. I found out, then yeah. Anyway, it's an interesting thing. It goes round and round. Where she stops, I don't know. But let's take a break, and we'll be back with our third block here in just a moment.
Cloud Native Now is the web's leading resource for the growing cloud native ecosystem. CloudNativeNow.com is your destination for news, thought leadership, features, and webinars on cloud native architecture, Kubernetes, serverless, cloud native application development, microservices, service mesh, cloud native security, and more. Stay on the cutting edge of modern application development at Cloud Native Now.
All right, folks, we're back, and we're talking about now the cost of LLMs and AI and all these platforms that are out there, because it turns out it gets pretty expensive pretty quickly. Every prompt requires a token, not just one token, two tokens. You can need one for the inbound request and one for the outbound request, and you get charged for each token. A lot of the organizations that I'm talking to are starting to figure out they can only really afford to maybe do one project, maybe two. They can't launch a bunch of these things at the same time because it gets too expensive pretty quickly. There's a story up on techstrong.ai from talking about how DataIQ has added some ability to monitor the cost consumption of these LLMs. I think that's going to be a bigger issue as we get deeper into these kinds of projects. But Tracy, what's your thought about the way the LLMs are accessed, priced, and what are the cost implications?
Well, first of all, I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that article, their announcements about what they're doing. I never thought about it, to be honest. You know, you think about the technology and you get excited about the technology and you don't dig down. We did that with Kubernetes, to be quite honest. We didn't think about the cost of Kubernetes and how to manage that cost. So I feel like tools that are starting to support the infrastructure of these AI models are going to be popping up everywhere, because I think there's more than just tracking the cost. There is watching the transactions, because we always like to do that, right? And there's going to be more than one agent, right? Per LLM, it's not just one agent. So it could get pretty expensive. Not only that, the data is in this world is so fragmented. The idea of having tools that allow us to see the information in a more aggregated way in everything that we do is going to become important. So I'm pretty excited about seeing some of these, I would call them operational tools, start to be brought forward, because it really does mean that we have arrived in a place that I like to call applied AI. And it's just not a few of the big companies. It's not just ChatGPT. It's not just Google or Microsoft who's working on it. We are all starting to implement AI into software. And the more operational tools we have around that, the more likely that we'll be successful. So kudos, and let's hope we see more of them.
You know, we spoke about this in, I think it was last week, one of the gang episodes last week when we had Bonnie Schneider on, which was the cost of running these AIs, right? In terms of electricity and water usage and, you know, cooling down these machines that are running them. But I think this is typical of technology innovation. Is first you just want to make the damn thing work and prove that out. Then you start optimizing, right? And you start shrinking the transistor. We don't use, but you know, back in you start shrinking transistors and, you know, making things better optimized, more efficient. And I think this is just the first, you know, it's the opening leg of a much longer race in terms of that, you know, you got to know there's a problem before you can solve the problem. And this is part of knowing there's a problem and saying, okay, now we need to optimize this. And there's always smart people. Brad Feld, who I worked a lot with, he funded all of the startup companies I was involved in and one of the smartest people I know. He always said, these things are evolutionary, not revolutionary. You'll get that one revolutionary thing, but then it's followed by all of these baby steps of evolution that optimize it and shine it up and take the rough edges off to make it truly commercially viable. And we may look back on this 3-5 years from now and say, that's what was going on right now with this kind of stuff. Right, we can't build every data center and into a hydroelectric dam, and we've got to bring the cost down of LLMs, and there might be other ways of doing it. Right, maybe we do smaller LLMs, maybe we have very, you know, specialized LLMs, and we switch out ones that are more efficient for a particular job. Well, you know, that's what humans do.
Sharon, does any of this sound familiar? I give you a small taste of something, and then you get you get addicted.
It's almost like it's following a very similar trajectory to the evolution of cloud computing. Does that ring a bell for anyone? And but what sticks out for me is that it's taken us a decade longer to get to the point where we need to start implementing FinOps and cloud cost management and all of those as we figure out just how much we're spending on that. But, you know, with the AI evolution, we've really reached that point a heck of a lot faster, or at least we're paying attention to
AI time.
The flags that are waving.
Right. Continuing crunching down that time factor. It just seems... Yep.
So wait, did you just invent a new buzzword, FinAIOps? Come on.
Oh, I did. Oh, I got to patent that.
I like AI FinOps.
FinOps?
Fame.
Yeah, let's try to create a word out of that.
Just what the world needs, another acronym.
I know.
Yeah. Very cool stuff.
Well, but I would argue, too, that at some point, I'm going to use an AI model to keep track of my AI costs to optimize. So I'm going to use the AI to govern and manage the AI, right?
Yep.
But that's the nightmare scenario.
where it's right? regulating itself.
Well, and then it starts replicating itself. And then is it alive? Ooh. You know, but when software writes software.
And yeah, I'm lazy. I just want my service provider to provide me that information. It should be part of the service. Yeah,
good luck with that. It'll be on your cell phone bill. Go find it. But, you know, speaking of this, though, I got to tell you, I was out at dinner last night. And I was out in a restaurant in Miami that just opened. But it's a New York staple. And Mike probably knows it, called Rao's. R-A-O-S. They make the sauce, though. They sold the sauce business. Fantastic restaurant, by the way. If you're down in Miami, at Miami Beach, it's at the Loews Hotel. But we were talking about AI at the table, three couples. I'm the only tech dude there. And, you know, but they're all dabbling, and the two of the wives hadn't even used it ever, including my own. But be that as it may, I said something, and in talking about it, I realized that I've already become dependent on AI to help me with my writing. Not that I just take articles that AI writes and give them to Sharon to publish. At least she doesn't know. But
I know you do that.
But I often will start with an AI generated and then make it my own, or take mine, put it into AI and say, make it more persuasive or more punchy. And it's not just articles. It's the abstracts for events. It's my emails. It's just so much easier to kick off your writing, no matter what it is you're writing, with that.
Alan, I am so with you on that. I do that all the time. I have become very dependent upon
quickly it like sucked me in.
That, I don't have, if there's stuff that I need to research, it'll do that for me. So it's all it's like, yeah. I say I'm lazy. I want things handed to me. I'm just like most people, and I have become super dependent upon it for, you know, doing a proposal, writing something for a paragraph or a talk that I'm submitting. But I don't always use it verbatim, but I will read it first, and then I'll take the thoughts and the structure of it and make it my own. And it's so much easier. It saves me so much time.
Absolutely.
I am a big fan. I totally rely on it now.
All right. I'm going to launch an AI detox center. You guys will all be invited in a few
hours. 12-step AI program.
But you know? I mean, that's always been kind of the goal, though, right? To use it to make our lives better and easier. I mean, I use it to help me proofread my proofreading. And Grammarly is a great tool that I use every day. I do my editing pass and then I let that run. And let me tell you, it picks up, you missed a comma here, or there's an extra space, or, you know, somebody spelled this wrong and you didn't catch it. And it makes my job easier. It makes the quality of the content that we're putting out that much better. And so, yeah, maybe I'm a little dependent on it, but I think, you know, I'm also not just letting it run through and do my job for me, because that's
not yet
the balance that we're trying to get to. But
I will tell you the one upside I really do appreciate. There's a lot of folks out there who are not gifted writers, shall we say, but they have a good idea and they have a notion and they have a thing that they want to share. And now they have a mechanism to do that in a way that the rest of us can comprehend, because in the past they might have written something that was indecipherable and, you know, the idea would have been lost. So in that sense, it will, the community of ideas will benefit immensely.
Agreed. Agreed. Mm-hmm.
AI is crack. Prove me wrong. All right. Hey, that's going to wrap
our show. No matter how much it costs.
No matter what it costs. Exactly. I want that next hit. All right. I think that's going to wrap up our Tech Strong Gang here for Monday. We are in Paris. Stay tuned. I think starting Wednesday, we'll be streaming Paris time. I think 10 in the morning till about 4 or 5 in the afternoon Paris time, and then we'll repeat it, which should be prime time for those of you over in the U.S. We'll try to keep you up to date on everything going on at KubeCon, Cloud Native Con, as well as everything else going on in the tech world. We'll be, you know, trying our best to follow that, including today, where we'll have the rest of our TechStrong TV schedule right after this. You've been watching TechStrong Gang. Thanks, gang.